and welcome to edition 286 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are back and here today to bring you our reviews of the US and Mexico Grand Prix and take a quick look ahead to the next race in Brazil as well. It's almost a big American continent edition, basically. I am Richard Baxter, hosting again this evening, and joining me on tonight's pod, we have NRF1 podcast co-founder Perry Hamilton, or Ped to us.
Or Ped to you, Ped to all the people that matter. So, good to be here, Rich. Thanks for having me on. Lots to talk about, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And also joining us, we have to say, is the F1 fan with the wizard beard, and at the weekend he became our resident strategist, Phil Gray.
Good evening, how are you?
Yeah, good. Well, we have to say this, I've titled you the resident strategist, basically because on our WhatsApp group you were saying kind of towards the end of the race in Mexico, Mercedes need to bring Bottas in, make him go for the fastest lap, pretty much as you were like messaging that they did exactly that.
It wasn't as he was messaging. You've shortchanged Phil there. Phil almost pulled a Kyle on this. Phil almost went full Oracle on this, and he did it about three or four laps before Mercedes pulled the trigger, because we then engaged in the conversation of, well, if Lewis gets passed by Perez, then Lewis would have a free stop to Gasly, and you'd give Lewis the opportunity to pit onto fresher tyres, and for Lewis to then get the fastest lap, so that he could have the point because he'd be in the top 10. And while we were then having that chat, that battle continued on, and then Mercedes decided to listen to Phil because Phil knows what he's talking about.
No, it was a few laps before, but literally as soon as when I sent the message, there was a bit of a gap for Perez, and I didn't think he was going to really get close enough, because I thought his tyres would have gone a bit earlier than they did. And I sent it, and then I saw the times for Perez just reduce really quickly. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that he's going to pass him. But he didn't get past, obviously didn't get past Lewis. And then Mercedes then did just pick up the phone, asked me what I thought I should do, and told him.
Direct radio, was it?
Yeah.
Was your first response, don't let Valtteri get passed into the first quarter? That's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come to that. We'll come to that in a bit. But we kind of missed the US Grand Prix because it's been a lot going on. There's always a lot going on. This is the problem. We say that every time. But we need to kind of touch base with the US Grand Prix. Basically, I had a little watch of the highlights again today, and the main take I got it was a strategic battle on the track, which in the end Red Bull won, but not by much.
Yeah, no, Red Bull seemed to be doing everything that Mercedes had done well in the past few seasons, where they're making the right calls at the right time, which is obviously a sign of a championship winning team. They're not making those silly mistakes of trying to leave Max out too long and his tyres blowing up anymore. They're getting him in at the right time. They've been sorting the strategy out really well, and obviously Max is the driver that's going to be able to capitalise on that.
But I think to that point, Phil, I think the reason that they're able to make those correct strategic calls is because they're at the front of the pack. They're not having to react anymore. And that, I think, is the key difference. And strategy is always that much easier when you're the person that's leading off. And it's much harder to be reactive with your strategy when you don't have a faster car, or when you don't have a competitive car. And I mean, even as much as last season, the gulf between Mercedes and the rest of the pack, I don't care if it's Red Bull or whoever, but the gulf between Mercedes and the rest of the pack was clear, even at tracks that aren't, you know, yeah, there might be one or two tracks where Red Bull were quicker because of aero or whatever, but knowing that actually they probably outright out and out have the fastest car right now, it gives them that edge in strategy. They can probably be a little looser. They can probably, and that's exactly, and you're right, Mercedes usually for most of the time come off looking like the strategic geniuses over the last 6-7 seasons, whatever, but that's because they have the faster car. I mean, it's if you look at it from a, use another sporting analogy, you're always going to look like a genius if, as a football manager, you decide to pull a substitution and you can substitute on a Ronaldo or a Messi quality player. Well, yeah, you've got that in your back pocket. You're always going to look like, oh, genius substitution, he knows what he's doing. But if your bench is dross, you're never going to, you know, whatever substitution you make is never going to have an impact. If your car's not fast enough to be competitive, whatever strategy you choose isn't going to work out. And all we're going to do as armchair fans, obviously not on the podcast because Norfolk knows Formula One, but as most armchair fans are going to do, if your strategy doesn't work, people will think it's a bad strategy. So it's a really tough thing. And I absolutely get your point. Red Bull have the opportunity to use strategy to their advantage, and they're smashing it. Like, they're doing a really good job at that, but partly I think that's because they've got the car to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the point about having the machinery there is obviously evident, because especially in the last 2-3 races where Perez has also been there to be Max's backup guy and be able to play that strategy card and make Mercedes think about what they're going to do, which they didn't have at the early part of the season. You know, for whatever reason, it took Perez a little bit longer than anyone thought it would take him to settle into the Red Bull. But you know, now he's there as Max's wingman, which Mercedes had have had over the past four years and majority of the first half of this season. But now, obviously, Bottas hasn't performed so well in the races over the last couple of races, although qualifying he's done really well. But yeah, it's everything's playing into Red Bull's hands for them to be able to pull the strings of what strategy they're doing. But they are still doing an exceptional job at their strategy, I think.
Completely agree. Yeah, absolutely. They're doing a fantastic job. Because and they have the platform to do it. It's you hate nothing more than seeing a team with the platform to be successful and then they F it up. Like, that's frustrating when you've got it all in front of you and then it's nobody's fault but yours. And you know, we're seeing them actually. You know, look at Lando and the rain. That was on the team. Yeah. You know, the team should have been really, really firm with Lando to bring him in and pit him. And when it didn't happen, that's just an absolute strategic howler. They were in the position to strategically succeed, and they didn't. But Red Bull aren't falling into those traps.
And I have to say, with your race, it seemed to be the same old Formula One problem of catching, but then struggling to overtake. Because Hamilton, you know, he got kind of within the 2-second gap, which it always kind of seems to be, and you know, just turbulent air and all the rest of it, just cannot get close enough to get in an overtaking position. Do you think, you know, we've obviously got rule changes for next year, everyone's hopeful they're going to work, do you think they will? Do you think it's going to make a massive difference, or do you think there'll still be this kind of issue there?
I mean, I hope it will make a difference and cars will be able to chase closer. However, throughout the history of Formula One, go back as far as you like, cars were designed to run as quickly as they can at the front. No one's designing the car to be behind people. Although there seems obviously that they understand they're not going to be at the front all the time. But whenever they're doing any of their development of the car, it's in a wind tunnel. There's not a car in front of it in the wind tunnel. They don't set that up to seeing how well the car performs in dirty air. And while there's that complete development on being the quickest car on the track, you're always going to have problems when you're going through dirty air. I can't see how the rule changes and of how the chassis is going to be set up. I mean, we saw they had a rolling chassis a few earlier in the season of what it's going to look like. Yeah, it looks great. It's, you know, hopefully it's going to be quick, but I can't see how they're going to get around the fact that every single team is trying to make the fastest car, and the way they get the numbers for making the fastest car is by making it so it goes through clean air.
And of course, Phil, if you take that a step further and go, okay, well, what about those teams that know out and out they're not going to be field leaders? So why don't they design their cars with the idea that potentially, you know, why don't we put some disruption in the wind tunnel? What do we do? Because of course, on Saturday, you're not going to be racing, but you're going to be finding the clear space and you're going to be getting those flying laps to get you as far up the grid as possible so that you can get into as much clear air as possible. So if you build a car to be able to run in dirty air or understand the aero around that, then you're going to hamstring yourself in terms of performance anyway for when you do find yourself at the front of you're not going to operate at front of a grid or whatever, you're not going to be able to operate on dirty air. But also, and I think this actually comes almost full circle as a point, because teams have always designed their cars to be super fast without any instruction for it, the regs support that level of design. So the things that people would have to do to their cars to make it so that they can run efficiently in dirty air would breach the design regulations. And that, I think, is why they then tried to change the design regulations. But they changed the design regulations so cars can run close to each other. But they don't, as you then say, Phil, they don't run those testing scenarios when designing their cars. So it's just a bit of a cycle. But what I will say is, all you really need, when you consider battery packs and when you consider power modes and when you consider DRS, I don't need you to be on the guy's bumper. I need you to be a couple of tenths quicker or closer. So really, if we can make some aero changes that allow people to follow that little bit closer, a couple of tenths or a tenth and a half closer for an extra lap, those other gadgets, such as, you know, battery power and DRS, will facilitate more overtaking. And it will potentially then facilitate more. I think you'll see a lot more people being alongside. I don't think you'll see a lot of overtaking coming into corners, but I think you'll see a lot of that traction coming off the line because you'll be that much closer going in to the corner, so you can be that much closer coming out, and then it will be a matter of who gets the best traction, gets the slipstream, and regardless of whether you've got DRS, it sets you up for the next corner or a potential pass along a straight. So, I don't think these regulation changes are going to see us having cars, you know, front wing on bumper and running really quickly. I don't think that's the case. But what I think it's going to allow us to do is to have cars be in that dirty air for maybe 1, 2, 3 laps longer and close that gap enough so that the additional benefits that the cars have add more of a benefit.
Let's certainly hope so. So we get some more exciting racing. But that's a kind of a quick brief overview of US. Is there anything either of you wanted to add on the US Grand Prix quickly?
It was disappointing because it's normally one of the better delivering races for me. And I think just because I don't seem to recall being overly awed by it, if that makes sense. I think, as you say, it was getting close towards the end, but I don't know about you. If it gets close towards the end and they're really building up, we're going to have a great battle. And then nothing actually comes of it. Mm-hmm. I'm always just a bit like, okay. Well, that's a bit flat. It was a race. I think both Austin and Mexico were more exciting. I think the Saturday was great. And then I think that it was the feeling of what's going to happen between quali finishing and knowing that you're going to have a super exciting drag down to the first corner. So I think for me, I felt really excited and really built up for the start of the race.
Yeah.
For me, so it was more that was where my emotion was like, oh my god, you know, quali's been great, that's really set us up, that's really put us on a good platform to have a great race, and then both have kind of ended up being a little disappointing, which is a shame.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you actually, and we'll move on to Mexico, because that race especially, I was watching it and I was kind of nerves, my heart was going, I was really excited, and you were thinking, you know, what's going to happen? Because you've got the two Mercedes, the two Red Bulls. We know the slipstream is powerful into turn one, and what's going to happen? In the end, it was pretty much a kind of carnage at the start. It was Danny Rick obviously clipped the back of Bottas's car, spun him round, and then I
thought it was very nice for Perez to apologise for that action at the time.
Yeah, Perez who didn't even touch it.
Yeah, so I'm really sorry about that. You got nowhere near him.
Yeah, absolutely. That was very strange. But then the other thing that was even stranger, I thought, and I've put the quote down here, and the way I've described it, it's a lot like Eminem's Trailer Park Girls. Verstappen just went straight around the outside.
Wow! Did we just delve into some rap music on here? Is that the first time that's happened?
I don't know. Around the outside. That's
I'm familiar with the song. I'm not that old. Jeez. <Yeah. laughs>
Well, I was writing it earlier, and I wrote around the outside, and I just thought of that bit of the song, so I had to make the reference. So I hope it went down well. But it's
apologies to all the listeners for that.
But yeah, Verstappen. What was that? It was a very strange one. You know, down into turn one, we obviously mentioned Bottas and Ricciardo having their touch, but Verstappen just clean around the outside of both Mercedes.
Yeah, well, I think Max got a really good launch, really good tow, and didn't get covered off enough. So if you look at pre-race, so looking back at the starts of Mexico and where other cars had made a similar sort of move, Max was in Bottas's position not last year, last time we were there, and he just pushed the guy in third. Who was in third? I can't remember. Pushed him out a little bit further, just went slightly further out to the left than Bottas did, which stopped that angle to get around the outside quite so much. While Bottas looked like he was trying to leave the door open for Lewis, he forgot to shut it for Max, and just found himself in the middle of nowhere and got hit up the jacksie by Danny Rick, and then spent the race looking at Danny Rick's jacksie.
It was.
I found it a bit. Somebody said to me, "Oh, did you see the race?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "What about the start?" And I said, "And they said, do you think Bottas was trying to let Lewis through?" And that's why, you know, and you just said there, Phil, you know, was Bottas leaving the door open for Lewis and everything like that? I just think if that's what they were trying to do, that's utterly ridiculous to try doing that on the very first corner after a 20 car drag down that run to the first corner. It's ridiculous. What you want to do is focus on your own start, get as many cars through the first corner in as high a position as you can. And then, if it all breaks your way and you want Bottas to let Lewis through, then do it later. Maybe if it's even lap 2 or 3, do it once you've broken DRS or, you know, before you get that 2 second lead or whatever. Do it that way. Make yourself super, super wide, 2 cars abreast before going into an apex or whatever. And then that way no one else can get around you. I don't mind how you do it, but the idea that I'm not saying that wasn't the case. I'm not saying that, you know, Valtteri wasn't told, make sure you can let Lewis through on turn one if you can. But that shouldn't have even been part of the discussion for me. And I personally don't think that's what Valtteri was trying to do. But I also think that it highlights yet again, and I take no credit for this. This is Adam from our podcast group chat. His dad, you know, Valtteri Bottas, great driver, not a great racer. Hmm. And for me, you know, being on pole, having a run down, yeah, okay, you're not on the right side of the grid. Yeah, okay, you're cutting a hole in the air for everyone else. I get that. But how much later on the brakes was Max? That's not toe. That's not getting a toe down the back. That's being brave on the brakes and trusting your car that it will stick. That Merc is fast. It was fast enough to go on pole, which means you can brake that bit later. But Valtteri didn't. And if he's breaking to let Lewis through, then again, I come back to my original point, which is, that's just ridiculous.
And do you think it was a case almost of, you know, they went through all their briefings talking about what their plan is and different scenarios, and the two drivers, you know, Hamilton and Bottas, both almost forgot the situation, and it was a bit of like, after you, oh no, after you, oh no, after you, but no, after you, and because they were just side by side, just going along together, and then it never really seemed that either one of them was actually just going to go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think either of them tried to get in the right position for the corner. From looking at the start, in real time when I was watching it, to me it looked like Bottas had got himself in a position where he was literally trying to get Lewis through the corner, but completely forgot about everything else that was happening around him, or perhaps didn't expect the for Max to have quite such a good launch, and therefore then tow and be right alongside. It's, you know, I think had it been race one of the season where all points were equal, you'd like to think that Valtteri would be a bit more protective of where he is, break that a little bit later to make sure that he's first in the corner. But as it is, he's an outgoing driver of a team that he's been number two driver of for majority of the season, if not really all of it, without being, you know, too blunt about it. He, you know, has he just gone for that number two driver role of being able to let the number one through, and but just kind of forgot about everything else?
Mm. And I mean, I don't know what your takes were, but watching the race, I kind of got halfway through, and it just seemed clear suddenly that Red Bull, they really were in a class of their own, especially Verstappen, and the only way they were going to lose that race was if there was going to be a mechanical failure, or, you know, a big safety car or something like that,
or an atrocious pit stop failure, which shockingly is what they had issues with Valtteri.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's you know, even the stuff when you need the luck isn't coming your way.
Yeah. No. Although it was interesting on Valtteri's last pit stop of his what felt like six. They held him back a little bit later
for the space,
to create the space on the track in order for him to be able to get the fastest lap. Cause he came in, obviously come in before for a scrubbed set of softs. Then they put him straight out into traffic, or straight into Max, wasn't it really? Which caused its own confusion. So he then has come in for another set of scrubbed, and then they held him back to find the space. Which, you know, they thought about it on the last time, really. Merck should have thought about it on the first. And is this going back to the point that we made earlier about, you know, championship winning teams don't make those mistakes in strategy, where Red Bull haven't been doing that recently, whereas you see the occasional ones from Merck at the moment that look like you guys aren't really all far and on as you were.
And with the race win in the Drivers' Championship, I think it's now, is it 19 points Verstappen's lead?
I think if he has a DNF, then it's going to... Max is on 312.5 and Lewis is on 293.5.
So yeah.
He had the half points from earlier in the season.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's 19 points difference. That's, you know, it's not far off being a whole race win. You know, do you think the title is Max's, or do you think there's going to be another twist yet?
I think there'll be a twist. I mean, there has to be a twist. I mean, the thing is, I mean, you look then at the constructors, there's 1 point in it. Merck are only 1 point ahead of Red Bull. This fight is going to go down to the wire. Mercedes will find ways to stay competitive. And when I say, I mean, I think it's quite interesting that, you know, we're talking about Mercedes will find a way to stay competitive. Red Bull will find ways to manage their strategy and be successful. We're not really talking about Mercedes and Red Bull. We're talking about two drivers who are generational talents. One, the single greatest Formula One racing driver of all time, and you will not change my mind on that. No one will change my mind on that, and I don't care you know, Rich is going to give
Max
you the.
Max is great, but it's early.
Rich is going to give
that.
You. Don't come at me with that, Phil. Rich is going to give you the handles for contacting us a little bit later. Don't come at me with this whole thing about, you know, Ayrton, whose career was cut short, or, you know, Michael statistically. Lewis is beating those statistics, and he is nowhere near done. So, sorry if you're having to write down the timestamp of when I just swore at Phil, Rich.
It's fine. You know, this is why I have a document open. It's nice and easy for me to...
Just putting the note down.
Yeah, and when I get to edit, it's just, oh, yeah, I've got to beep this bit. I know exactly where it is.
Done.
Easy.
That's so, outstanding work. So.
Swear all you like.
But yeah, I just think we are talking about two generational talents, and I love. And it was quite a funny moment on the Sky broadcast with Brundle's commentary and Crofty's commentary. And Crofty said, you know, Max Verstappen has never led a single seater category world championship in his life, and Brundle was just like, he was in Formula One when he was 17. Like, that's insane. That yeah. At 17 years old, when most kids his age don't actually even know how to drive a car properly, and that's even including some of them who have their license, still don't know how to drive a car properly, and he's out there, you know, absolutely just showing incredible talent, and well on his way. And if Max ends up performing and maintaining his form, and Red Bull making the correct strategic decisions, then yes, they have absolutely got a car underneath them that Max will win a championship, and probably win the championship this year. But I do not believe it is over by any stretch, in any way, shape or form, because the one thing that Lewis has is, you know, a competitive spirit that has very, very rarely been seen before in Formula One, and he will find a way to do what needs to be done. And I think I think it will go down to the last race.
I love that, and I really hope it does. And as Ped just said, do get in touch with us and let us know your thoughts. There's the best place to start, probably patreon.com/nrf1. So that's patreon.com/nrf1. You will find the full edition of the podcast, including our Of the Weekend awards, which are up next. So if you're listening on Patreon right now, thank you, and those on their way. Get in touch on social media. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. The handle for all three is at @thenrf1, and you can email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
All right, so let's move on and discuss the latest Formula One news quickly. There is a contract extension for the Chinese Grand Prix. That's going to take us to 2025. So it's another 4 years of that yet, which will be good. I think the Chinese Grand Prix has always been pretty decent. And I've got a bit of an inside scoop here, which is a podcast exclusive. I haven't told anyone this, but I have some sources who have, well, basically they just got back from Dubai. They're out there quite regularly. There's quite a lot of rumours floating around the city that they're going to be building an F1 racetrack in Dubai. Now obviously we have Abu Dhabi, which is UAE as well, but there's talk of that. Yeah, rumours around the city of building this racetrack in Dubai. Now, the rumours say, and I've been told, that apparently they're going to build the racetrack at least partially on top of water. So potentially, as the cars go past, you can see the water ripple.
I cannot even begin to fathom how that will pass any kind of safety agreements when you consider the need for them to be able to get out of the cars, when you consider the fact that if it's on water, okay, if it's on like 2 inches of water, even then the risk is that if you put a wheel off, you know, you hit that, you come off, you skid, you hit that, you're aquaplaning, you've got zero grip. It's going to be atrocious. I'd be if they can do it, I mean, if anyone can do it, it's them, because they have so much money and so much tech, and they'll just threat, because it will be a fantastic spectacle. But I cannot see that getting past any kind of safety regulations.
No. It sounds like it's something of the people who've played the GTA 5 video game, what I'm talking about, but they literally have racetracks in there on top of water, and it's just, it's a video game, you know? It literally sounds like something from a video game that someone's made up. But I mean, yeah, no idea how they're going to do it. Those are the rumours that I've been told. They're the rumours that have been floating around the city from various people there. I mean, it sounds amazing. And who knows, you know, could we have another race in the Middle East?
I mean, on water. Oh, go. Yeah. Yeah, that's...
That's the perfect reaction, I mean, thing, right there.
Yeah. Okay.
Just, I don't... What? I mean...
I mean, really?
Yeah.
Nice try.
Christ. Awesome. Well, we'll move on and have a quick preview of the next race. So the next one is the final one in the kind of American continent, I suppose, counting North and South America as one. But Brazil, the Brazilian Grand Prix.
Interlagos.
Absolutely. It's a brilliant racetrack, this one. I think we all love it. And we know that the weather can change everything. And we were talking about earlier, you know, is there going to be another twist? Could Brazil provide the twist?
100%. Always can. But the thing with the Brazil race, I always think that should be, that it should be the final race of the season every season without a shadow of a doubt. Because it's one of those circuits that's steeped in absolute history. You know, the pit straight is in a ravine, effectively, and it's not the pit straight, so the grid's in a ravine, effectively, and it's just such a iconic venue, and so many great moments of the sport has happened there. It's always got a spanner to chuck in the works.
Absolutely. I often describe it as being like Formula One's version of Brands Hatch, because it's just in this kind of natural bowl where from one side of the circuit you can pretty much see everything. I mean, we talk about the atmosphere. We said about the atmosphere in America. They said about the atmosphere in Mexico. I mean, the Brazilians, they love their Formula One. And every single year we're there, the atmosphere is again, it's electric, isn't it?
I mean, it's football and Formula One. That's their sports. And considering they have created such successful Formula One drivers in the past, and they have such Formula One legacy, but you know, when you look at, okay, they've been super famous British Formula One drivers, we have Formula One teams. Super famous Italian Formula One drivers, they have Formula One teams. German Formula One drivers, they have Formula One teams. Brazil's never had a Formula One team.
And Rubens, get Rubens to get a team.
And that's exactly it. Oh, Barrichello Racing. We'd be a shareholder. We'd throw some Rubens, we'd throw some money your way. We'd get our logo on your car. We'd give you some sponsorship deal. But yeah, I mean, it would be. God, could you imagine? RB, you couldn't have RB, could you? Because that's Red Bull effect.
I'll tell you what, though, the colours are there straight away. You know, the yellow and green, it fits perfectly for the podcast, perfectly for Norwich, perfectly for Brazil. So we're there. You know, they're already.
I'm loving it. I am loving it. That would be good.
Already.
And exactly, I mean, he's dropped the ball here, hasn't he?
He needs to get Eddie Jordan on board to pay for it. He'll be fine.
The one thing that has always confused me, though, and you guys know a bit about football, and I kind of don't, but what I would say is, why is it that famous Brazilian footballers usually just go by one name, but famous Brazilian Formula One drivers don't? Do you know what I mean? Like, most Brazilian footballers, they just are known by that one name, you know? Ronaldo, Ronaldinho. I'm telling you, Mike, see, this is where my knowledge goes, because it's that far back. I couldn't necessarily tell you a Neymar. There you go. Neymar's Brazilian, isn't he? Someone tell me he's Brazilian otherwise.
Neymar Jr.
Neymar Jr. But still, like...
Yeah.
It's to do with their actual names, because I've just googled Ronaldinho.
Thanks, Rich.
Quickly. But Ronaldinho.
Their names are to do with their names. I love the clarity.
But Ronaldinho's actual name is Ronaldo. Excuse my pronunciation here. Ronaldo de Assis Moreira, commonly
right.
known as Ronaldinho yeah. Gaucho, or simply just, Ronaldinho.
I think it's
Ronaldinho.
I think a lot of it is so that. Like Europeans can actually reference and pronounce their name correctly a lot of the time, I think, is why a lot of them have been changed to fit into, you know, it's why Snickers got changed from Marathon, because there are certain aspects of people that couldn't pronounce it properly.
You just think it would be so cool to just have, like, a Brazilian driver on the grid that just uses the one name. Like, that would just be cool.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Like, I just think there's something awesome about it. But, yeah, I mean, heritage at Brazil is outstanding. The races are usually really entertaining. There's often... there's a weather risk as well with Sao Paulo. You never really know what you're going to get. And you know, that's exciting. Could throw a spanner in the works. It has, like, a bit like Silverstone, got its own weather climate, and it can turn on a dime. And you know, you mentioned it earlier, there's only one DNF for Max and a win for Lewis required, and that pendulum swings totally back. And if you've got a wet race, you know, that's potentially going to end up with a high level of risk. And we know Max is good in the wet, don't get me wrong, but if he gets clattered into someone into by somebody who isn't as good in the wet, then, you know, and Lewis manages to squirrel off, then hey, we could see a swing in the championship on you know, just like that. So yeah, there's a huge amount of excitement to come with this race, and it's a great track. It's one of those timeless tracks. Always provides it's a good looking racetrack. It's a really good atmosphere. Fans love it. So yeah, it's a super exciting one.
Absolutely, and I think what's going to add something else to this, a bit extra spice. It's another circuit where we've got a sprint race. So not only do you have qualifying, you have the sprint race on the Saturday, and that obviously sorts the grid for the Grand Prix on the Sunday. So, of course, I've just googled the weather as well, and it says right here, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, kind of rain and showers. Sunday, Monday, dry. Tuesday, rain. So it's looking potentially like the sprint race could be interrupted because of weather, where Sunday could be dry. So, I mean, it could be a case that... You know, imagine if Hamilton or Verstappen spun in the sprint race, ended up having to start at the back, and then had to fight through the field. What a race would be on for then!
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just for sheer entertainment value. Personally, I'd rather see that. If you had to pick one, I'd rather it be Max, just because I think that there's more likelihood of him actually cutting through the field, as we've seen. The problems Bottas had with the high humidity, or with the downforce levels at the weekend's race, without being able to get past the McLaren or Ricciardo. You know, I think the Red Bull could be in better shape to actually get through the field and make it really interesting, rather than, I think the Merc would struggle a little bit more, because we're still relatively low downforce with the altitude, that's the word I was looking for earlier, not humidity, of the race, then that could make it more interesting. But the way Max is driving at the moment, I really can't see him making a scoreboard mistake. If he is at the back of the grid, that'll be because someone else has hit him.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. And I think it's pretty much every single podcast we say, who is it the most important weekend for? I think it's kind of obvious this weekend that it's Hamilton and Mercedes, right?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I mean, if you wanted to go something that wasn't that was a little different, you could say McLaren, because they need a good finish to retake that third place, because I think, you know, that is going to start coming down to the wire as well, and it's a big chunk of cash that they're fighting for. and certainly they are not as well funded as you would imagine Ferrari potentially would be. The coffers aren't necessarily as big. If you wanted to go a little different, a little less obvious, then you could easily say McLaren as well.
Good shout. Awesome. Well, I think that wraps up everything nicely. I'm already looking forward to the Brazilian Grand Prix. This is going to be good. I'm excited already.
Yeah, it's going to be a great race.
Awesome. So, I think we kind of mentioned earlier, we're now going into a triple header. So, after Brazil, we have Qatar immediately after that, and then Saudi Arabia after that. So, we'll try and get a Brazilian review in next week. So, do keep an eye out for that. I think all we have to say is we will return with E287, which will be that Brazilian Grand Prix review. In the meantime, Ped and Phil, thanks for joining me. It's been good tonight.
It's been great, mate.
Yeah, it's been good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's always good. Always good. That's everything wrapped up nicely. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Good night.